And it gives you the idea to become more competitive, more impactful, more responsible. And of course, that's great for shareholders, for the community. And it gives them an opportunity, employees and suppliers, and it really helps them become just a better corporate citizen.
Komið sæl og verið velkomin í augnabliki iðnaði, hlaðvarp iðnafræðslusetturs. Í dag ætla ég að taka smá viðtal við hana Jennifer Svolbenberg en við erum saman í faghóp loftslagsmál hjá stjórnvísi og mér fannst mjög áhugavert hvað hún hafði að segja hvernig tilskipun ESB sjálfbærni upplýsingagjöf á eftir að hafa áhrif á lítil og meðalstór fyrirtæki. En ég ætla bara að leifa henni að kynna sig sjálfa, gjöri þið svo vel.
I'm a lawyer by training, and I've spent my career in financial services from the beginning, both in a legal capacity and non-legal capacity. I started my career in commodity trading in the US and working for oil companies and commodity houses. And my last position was as the chief governance officer of a fintech in London. And within that role, I developed the sustainability strategy across the company's footprint in Europe, the Middle East, and Southeast Asia, and then built that into a key pillar of our global corporate governance practice. And while we were a company that had great market share, by size, we were in fact an SME. So we were just under 50 worldwide.
Right. So what are you doing in Iceland?
$1 million question, isn't it? I came in October 2022. My partner is Icelandic and had some business opportunities here. And I took the opportunity to come out with him and Great. Get to know the country and get to know the marketplace.
Nice. So I'm just going to throw the most asked question in Iceland. How do you like Iceland?
It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Though I fell on the ice this morning, so we'll see.
that's what we'd like to hear.
We could do a little bit more about salting the sidewalks, but otherwise we're doing a great job.
Yeah. So at the moment it's covered in snow outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you talked about SME. I just wanted to get a little bit into that and we are here to discuss sustainability reporting mm-hmm. for SMEs, but can you define SME for us just
I think quickly? The best broadest definition is likely companies with less than 250 employees and less than 50 million euros in turnover. That's the general EU definition. Micro companies are those that are less than 10, smaller less than 50, and medium are less than 250.
Right.
And I think when we sometimes think with those companies, like, where do they really have impact? And I think 90% of world businesses are considered SMEs,
mm-hmm.
and about 50% of worldwide employment. So this is like these small companies are actually like a huge sector mm-hmm. of the global economy.
Yeah. And just briefly, what is sustainability reporting exactly?
That's just any disclosure of a company's environmental, social, or governance data. So that can be the carbon footprint, water and energy consumption, their corporate sustainability programs, their employee benefits, the social impact and community impact of their operations. And it can include anything from the actual data, what they've done, the programs in place, their goals, and how they intend to meet their goals. Sustainability reporting varies so differently between who's asking the question and who's responding to it. Mm-hmm. But globally, it goes across the piece.
Mm-hmm. But there are certain pillars you need to inform. Especially if you're within a supply chain or
exactly. So I think right now one of the key things, of course, is carbon footprint reporting.
Yeah.
You know, so what what does that number look like? How do you plan to reduce that? And there are a number of international initiatives, such as science-based targets, that help, that are designed to have certain key parts of the industry, to have certain industries, mm-hmm. to help certain industries in their reporting and setting goals for reduction and where it needs to look. And there actually is a protocol for SMEs that is mostly focused on scope 1 and scope 2. But they're recognizing that under 250, of course, has a unique way of looking at it and doesn't, of course, have the resources necessarily to look into these issues as a major corporate. Mm-hmm.
So what can SMEs expect exactly? What's going to happen regards of sustainability reporting?
Many SMEs think that this is beyond their scope. They don't have the manpower, they don't really see, you know, they see where they operate in the economy and they don't see how what they do is really impactful. But SMEs do business with larger companies and they make up the supply chains of larger companies. And those larger companies, which of course work with even larger companies or other large companies, are under increased pressure from their stakeholders. So their shareholders, their regulators, their communities, their employees, and under pressure to reduce, you know, if we can look, especially focusing on carbon footprinting, on reducing their carbon footprint and reducing their environmental impact, on increasing their social benefit. And as they, you know, looking at carbon footprint, as they look in their scope 3, they have to calculate that number. They have to go into their supply chains. They have to go into their value chains. And the SMEs are there. And the SMEs are going to be required to come up with these numbers. They're going to be asked, what is your carbon footprint and what are your plans to reduce it? And as more regulations come into place around the world, as more companies make a net zero commitment, this is going to become more and more important and more SMEs are going to be required to provide this information in order to keep doing business with these larger companies. Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of any real life examples of how a company has been affected by within a supply chain?
There's a story that I think really hits home, and it was a law firm who was doing business with an oil company, and they were thinking, the partnership gathered, how can we continue to do business with this oil company? How is that in line with our goals? And they wondered, should we only do business with them with regard to their corporate matters? Should we limit business to existing extraction and not help them with new extraction projects? And while they were having, let's say, this existential crisis about how to deal with this long-term client, the oil company then sends them a sustainability report and says, okay, what's your carbon footprint, guys? What's your plan? What are you doing? Because you're my service provider. And if you can't help me meet my carbon reduction goals and get your numbers in line, I need to find a new law firm. And that was a real wake-up call to them, because they didn't expect the oil company to be turning the tables on them. And I think it's a great example that companies that...
it's a bit sarcastic.
Yeah, it's very much like, well, wait a second, you can't ask me that question. I'm just a law firm, you know, I don't have any impact. But of course, and then we go back to, how is this going to impact SMEs? Well, in order for the law firm to give that number to the oil company, they now have to go into their supply chain. You know, in the first round, they probably will give scope 1 and scope 2. But when they have to actually go in and look at scope 3, well, now it's everybody who delivers services to the law firm. Plus, they need to go in to see the business that they're supporting. But the people who give them their paper, their printer ink, those who provide the coffee service, who they're renting their offices from. Like, this is all going to fit part of that picture. And then you see an example like that, where you have a large law firm and a large oil company. And suddenly, all of those SME service providers are now getting caught in that discussion. Mm-hmm. And I think there are other instances where there are companies that are saying they're not going to, and I know this is the case in the UK, that they will not issue contracts of a certain size, let's say £1 million or more, or a contract at all, unless you have science-based targets in place.
Yeah.
And that's for SMEs as well. And that's really, we're going to see more and more of that going forward.
Are there any companies in Iceland that could potentially be facing this reality?
I think the majority could be. I mean, any company right now that's doing, any Icelandic company that's doing business overseas, that has overseas clients, that finds itself in that space, is certainly going to, could be facing this. And I have a feeling there are more companies that are dealing with this right now than we realize. And then, of course, Icelandic companies that are in the supply chains of larger Icelandic companies that are doing business abroad will, of course, find themselves in the position soon, especially with new regulations coming into place overseas, that where the reporting is going to trickle down.
Is the government or the Association of Industry, can they help in any way to support these SMEs?
I think there's a role for government, for associative industries, associations of industry, to certainly support. And I think there's also a role for the larger companies themselves. And we can talk about all of these. There's a great example out of Malaysia. Capital Markets Malaysia, which is a initiative from the Securities Exchange, the Securities Commission of Malaysia. And they created the simplified ESG disclosure guide to assist SMEs with their reporting. And then they also put together an adopter program, which helps SMEs deal with this. So it's very, very, it's broken down to the basics. And if you look through the guidance, it says, well, if you have no experience doing sustainability in your company, this is where you start. If you've been doing this just 2 to 3 years, you do this. And the more sophisticated you get, it helps you on that guide. And it's really for SMEs who are doing business with listed companies in Malaysia and helping them, but also knowing that, you know, with companies that are have signed up to other frameworks and have recording requirements. And I think it's really key in Malaysia, where 97% of the nation's business is within the micro, small and medium enterprise in that MMSME space. And so many of those are family owned. And really, they do need the support to keep the business going, to keep the businesses competitive in this environment. And that's really been a cooperation between the Securities Commission, the Capital Markets Malaysia, and as well as other consulting companies and advocacy organizations to make sure that's exactly what their market needs. There's a similar program also that is developing in Portugal, and that's through the Portuguese Trade Investment Agency. And they just had a big conference in September of 2023. And the idea, it's supporting SMEs, exporting SMEs. So helping them with their ESG strategy. And again, it's a cooperation between government and trade agencies in helping SMEs get, do the calculations, understand the terminology, understanding what needs to happen, understanding the terminology, understanding how to make those calculations and understand the reporting and why this is necessary. And I think the other interesting thing about the Portuguese program from that initial conference is explaining why this is necessary for financing. Mm-hmm. Because while we are very familiar right now with green loans, and so that it's, you can get a better loan to do a green project or a transition project, I think we're going to be seeing in the future aspects that if you don't have this information and you are not on a reduction path, it could be more and more difficult to get financing in the future. So we're going very much from that carrot to stick model. And particularly in the EU, where the EU Green Deal is coming into effect. And those requirements are going to make financing a little bit trickier if you don't have these positions in place. And there's all, other industries where, and I mentioned that it's an interesting role for corporates to play. So there's a case study in the UK where Grosvenor, which is one of them, one of the companies in the UK that is requiring science-based targets in order to award a contract of a certain size. So they've partnered with Heart of the City, which is an industry organization supporting responsible business in the UK. And Heart of the City has delivered a program for, on behalf of Grosvenor, for their SMEs to help them prepare to, again, what the Portuguese government is doing and helping them understand the jargon and prepare and develop the infrastructure to make these calculations and create the support and then help them file, submit the paperwork for science-based targets. And, you know, because Grosvenor made this decision that it wanted to, you had to have that, it made that decision that you couldn't have the contract, they were only going to award contracts based on having science-based targets, but they didn't want to lose their key suppliers, the SMEs that they'd been working with for years. And so I think I know that there's a key role for other corporates to do the same. And they have the knowledge, they have the experience, and they can really help. So if we can really help. And if you just do a simple Google search about ESG reporting or sustainability reporting in SMEs, especially just in for to see what happened, I did it this morning and came up with some. There are many of the banks in the UK are listing how companies can help SMEs in their supply chain become more sustainable, how they can help them with sustainability reporting. Okay. It seems it's very much a 360 approach where it's going to be government, it's going to be trade industries, it's going to be the larger corporates themselves, because it to support and make this transition on the economy side. So there, I think there's a role for all three to play.
The support from the government or any higher power, is that really enough? You always need to have the manpower to do this sort of work.
Of course. And I think that's where it needs the guidance and the work needs to be designed. And I know I can speak with great experience about the Heart of the City program, and as well, I have faith in the Malaysian program, knowing the organization that's designed it. They need to be done with the SME in mind. So they not only need to tell them what needs to be done, but they need to help them build the infrastructure and identify the resources within the company. Because if you're a 5 to 10 person company, you're not going to have a head of sustainability. Mm-hmm. At 50 size, it's likely that that person's going to be doing sustainability on top of something else. Mm-hmm. So it's really helping them identify the resources in that company already that have the data that can help work together, because it's probably going to help them create the committee or the working team that can help do this. And how do you, without bringing in someone who, in an SME, everybody's doing multiple things. In a larger company, you have 10 people doing the same thing. In an SME, one person goes on holiday and that entire company, part of the company just stops. So, and when you start saying into an SME, yeah, we're going on a new initiative and we have more work to go. And everyone looks at each other saying, wait a second, I already am doing 3 jobs. What more do you want me to do? Yeah. So it's the training and the guidance needs to be designed understanding the way the SMEs work and seeing who already has this data, who is best placed to find it. And then having it really be a collaboration so that it's not all sitting with one person and becomes too much and then gets thrown away.
Yeah.
It really is understanding the unique concept, especially on the small to micro side. Even on a 215, there may be more capacity in a larger company under that 50 to 250 side, but that 50 and below, understanding the pressures that they're under, and then also explaining the value that's in this.
So what's the worst case scenario if companies, let's say in Iceland, won't take any action?
I think the worst case is the SMEs could be excluded from foreign markets and the value chains of larger companies. I mean, that's sadly, mm-hmm. frighteningly, that's the absolute worst case scenario.
That's pretty bad.
Which is pretty bad. But I think that there's this opportunity really... I think this, but rather than always looking at this, like the worst case scenario, of course, is really, really bad. But it presents a really great opportunity for SMEs because it allows them to like become more resilient. Because part of this, as you know, is going in and looking at the risks and then learning and then developing strategies to mitigate them. And when you're doing and then going through your own supply chain and your own businesses, and when you really begin to look at them, that, you know, looking, reviewing that helps you become more efficient. And it gives you the idea to become more competitive, more impactful, more responsible. And of course, that's great for shareholders, for the community. And it gives them an opportunity, employees and suppliers. And it really helps them become just a better corporate citizen and contribute more to the environment and the country and society.
Yeah.
So I think where it does have a pretty drastic worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. If we kind of look out on the other side, the work that's going to be required to prevent the worst case scenario actually could have a really positive outcome. And
yeah, I think that's pretty good words to yeah, final words. So Jennifer, thanks for coming.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.